United States government.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken Tuesday said the U.S. is still working on ceasefire talks between Israel and Hamas, a U.S.-designated terrorist group.
Hamas came back with new conditions, new demands, including demands and conditions that actually went beyond what it had already previously accepted. So we're working to see if we can bridge the gaps.
Blinken said a shipment of heavy bombs that had been withheld from Israel out of concern for the well-being of Palestinians in Gaza was still under review by the U.S. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu Tuesday claimed Blinken had assured him U.S. President Joe Biden's administration was working to cancel restrictions on arms deliveries to Israel. A U.S. envoy visited the Middle East Tuesday as Israel and Hezbollah seemed to be on the brink of all-out war. Linda Gradstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
Israel and Hezbollah seem to be closer than ever to a full-blown war, with escalating attacks on both sides against civilian and military targets. Tens of thousands of Israelis and Lebanese have been forced to leave their homes near the border. Israeli analysts say a full-scale war with Hezbollah would take a larger toll than the 8 months of fighting Hamas in Gaza. Israel has warned the Lebanese government that the whole country, not just Hezbollah in the south, would suffer heavy damage in an Israeli bombardment. Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah says any deal to end the fighting with Israel is tied to a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas in Gaza. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
Hundreds of protesters have been arrested in Kenyan capital Nairobi in ongoing protests against proposed tax hikes and a finance bill that is to be tabled in Parliament. Civil society groups say demonstrations and a planned sit-down outside Parliament buildings will continue despite the arrest. The Nairobi police commander on Tuesday said that no group had been granted permission to protest in Nairobi. This is VOA News. Russian President Vladimir Putin arrived in North Korea Wednesday for his first visit in 24 years, vowing to deepen trade and security ties with the reclusive nuclear-armed state and to support it against the United States. Putin was greeted by North Korean leader Kim Jong-un at a welcoming ceremony at an airport in Pyongyang, and the pair embraced and shook hands. Russian state media said Putin's plane touched down around 2:45 in the morning after a stopover in Russia's Far East. The U.S. and its Asian allies are trying to work out just how far Russia will go in support of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, whose country is the only one to have conducted nuclear weapon tests in the 21st century. U.S. President Joe Biden has ordered an expansive election year step to offer relief for potentially hundreds of thousands of immigrants without legal status in the United States. It comes after the Democratic president's own aggressive immigration crackdown at the southern border earlier in the month. Tuesday's new U.S. policy will allow certain U.S. citizen spouses who lack legal status to apply for permanent residency and eventually citizenship. Senior administration officials say the move could affect upwards of 500,000 immigrants. Biden spoke about his plans Tuesday at the White House, saying the Statue of Liberty is not a relic of American history. AP correspondent Norman Hall reports on a contentious Senate hearing about Boeing's safety issues.
Boeing CEO David Calhoun faced severe turbulence during a Senate hearing about the company's safety record. Calhoun's appearance was the first since a panel blew out of a 737 MAX during an Alaska Airlines flight in January. MAX jets crashed in 2018 in Indonesia and 2019 in Ethiopia, killing 346 people. Relatives of the dead, like Zipporah Kuna, question why accountability has taken so long.
Why pay attention now? Why not for the last 5 years that we have continually fought? We have been a muffled scream that has been screaming and no one has been paying attention.
Lawmakers accuse Calhoun of placing profits over safety, failing to protect whistleblowers, and even getting paid too much. Norman Hall, Washington.
Chinese Premier Li Shang, is set to talk with the Malaysian Prime Minister, where the two countries due to ink new cooperation pacts on digital economy and green development as they mark 50 years of diplomatic relations. Li is on the last leg of a trip that took him earlier to New Zealand and Australia. Malaysia's foreign minister has said that territorial claims in the South China Sea were likely to be on the agenda of the talks on Wednesday. More at VOAnews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
America. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty, Washington. Today is Wednesday, June 19th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenya's parliament to meet today and tomorrow to take up the controversial finance bill.
On the first day, I received over 3,000 SMS messages, and it was running through the night. And the public is just basically telling me one thing, reject that bill. It doesn't serve us, it doesn't serve our interests.
Civil society protests ADF rebel advances the Eastern DRC. Zimbabwe opposition leader and supporters appear in court after 2 nights in jail. Haitian police commanders meet Kenya's Inspector General of Police ahead of planned Kenya deployment to the Caribbean country. Today is Juneteenth federal holiday in the U.S. and a call for reparation and self-reliance by all African peoples.
Those of us that are fighting for reparations, and we should continue to fight, whether it happens or not, is another story. But we also must continue to build our own economics.
And Biden and Trump campaign for black votes during the Juneteenth holiday. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The lower house of Kenya's parliament will meet today, Wednesday, to consider the controversial 2024 finance bill. The whole parliament is expected to meet tomorrow, Thursday. This comes as hundreds of Kenyans took to the streets on Tuesday to express their disapproval of the bill, which proposes taxes on several items, including bread, cards, and mobile phones. The government says the bill will raise additional revenue. Parliamentarian Mili Odhiambo tells me that she will not be voting for the legislation. That's because her constituents have told her that though the thousands of social media messages to vote no, saying the bill doesn't serve the public's interest.
There's so much protest because Kenyans are feeling they're overtaxed. The cost of living is too high. There are no jobs. People are stressed out. They can hardly afford meals. People are dropping out of school. So the general situation in the country is not very good.
I was reading some of the items that have been taxed, things like bread.
Yes, yes. That's what we're actually wondering, because the things that are being taxed are very basic commodities. The finance bill seeks to tax things like bread, it seeks to increase the fuel cost, there was a tax on motor vehicles. Basically, the tax is touching on virtually every aspect of life. This is in addition to taxes that were introduced last year. So people are kind of just feeling totally overwhelmed that there's overtaxation. People are feeling like there's double taxation.
Listening to you, it sounds like you did not vote for it.
Well, it's coming for a vote, and I will not vote for it. One, because my own constituency has directly advised me not to vote for it. I don't also see the need. I sit in the budget committee that develops the budget for the country. The finance bill seeks to raise revenues for financing the budget. And I've raised it before, even in my committee, that we are actually putting a lot of stuff in our budget that we don't need right now. We are budgeting corruption, because there are projects that you can see come basically, they are sort of like individual budgets. And so we are basically, as a country, being forced to budget other people's lifestyles. And then there's so much show of opulence by some of the leaders that as Kenyans are struggling, people are showing us their, you know, expensive war chairs, how they can fly, how they can, you know, live large when Kenyans are struggling. So Kenyans are basically saying, we are tired of financing opulence. So that's part of the reason that I'm not doing that. And I'm sure you probably have known that there's been a very, very serious social media campaign. On the first day, I received over 3,000 SMS messages, and it was running through the night. Today, it's gone to like almost, you receive 2 to 3 every minute, because our numbers as members of parliament were circulated. And the public is just basically telling you one thing, reject that bill. It doesn't serve us, it doesn't serve our interests as the public.
I'm wondering, where did the suggestion come from to tax these items? Could it be the International Monetary Fund?
It is basically believed it's the International Monetary Fund. These are measures that are very reminiscent of measures that were done many years ago that actually harmed the economy. And Kenyans are saying, you know, there are these Bretton Woods institutions, pantsit, and they can, you know, prescribe measures which are textbook measures and do not help in an economy that is struggling like Kenya.
Mile Odhiambo is a Kenyan member of parliament. She was speaking with us from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. A team of Haitian police commanders on Tuesday met Kenya's Inspector General of Police ahead of a planned deployment to the Caribbean country expected to take place by the end of June. According to local media, the Haitian police also met commanders of the 1,000 Kenyan officers who will be deployed as part of the multinational peacekeeping mission. Kenyan constitutional lawyer Paul Mwangi told VOA's Douglas Mpuga that despite concerns by some Kenyans, the Kenyan government will deploy in Haiti.
Politically, I think the government still is intent on going ahead with this plan. I am not very sure as many people are enthusiastic anymore, even within the force, because the dangers that they face are becoming increasingly apparent. And anybody going on that trip now knows that this will be an engagement that can easily cost them their life. But secondly, it's also very clear that the rest of the world does not really appreciate what we are doing. And increasingly, this is beginning to look like a mercenary mission rather than the way it has been painted by the government. I see it's an obligation, an international obligation that we are adhering to.
Why is the Kenyan government so eager and keen to fulfill this mission?
I think there are two reasons. One, of course, because the request has been made by the USA, and this government has tried very much to keep looking good in the eyes of America, to the point even locally, people are now beginning to regard it like a puppetry of the United States. But secondly, I think at that time, being a new government, they thought that this was going to bolster their standing internationally, possibly as a country that went to Haiti and assisted Haiti in bringing peace. But the truth about what this really means has slowly seeped in, and now we are looking more like a mercenary country.
There were issues as far as the constitutionality of this mission work was concerned. Has all that been resolved?
But there was the issue that had arisen and resolved by the Constitutional Court about the process and about the fact that the government that we were signing up then was not a constitutionally elected government or constitutionally made up government in Haiti. Secondly, that we did not have any bilateral agreements with Haiti. There have been attempts to resolve that. Those are still being challenged, and especially because we now know that the government in Haiti, or constitutional government, only took place about a couple of weeks ago. So those issues are still alive in court, and the position of the judiciary so far has been that those troops should not go.
Does the court have to decide before the mission takes place?
Well, we have a situation in which the government has severally ignored court decisions. So it is very likely that regardless of what the judiciary will say, they are still going to push ahead with this mission.
That's Kenyan constitutional lawyer Paul Mwangi. He spoke from Nairobi with my colleague Douglas Mpuga. In the east of the Democratic Republic of Congo, several activities remain paralyzed on Tuesday in the towns of Beni and Butembo and in the territories of Beni and Lubero in the province of North Kivu. This was at the request of civil society organizations to protest the massacres of around 100 civilians by the Allied Democratic Forces ADF rebels in the eastern part of the country, Zanet Neti Zaidi reports.
Some traders from the town of Beni working at the Matongi shopping center completely closed their doors. The traders say they are responding to a call from civil society to demonstrate their displeasure at the killing of around 100 people by ADF rebels. For these business people, it is also an opportunity to urge the military authorities to strengthen the presence of their troops in these entities still under armed threat. He says things are like this today as a result of the killings that are taking place here in the eastern part of the DRC while the government appears to be doing nothing. He says that's why they said they could not remain silent. He says people are dying like animals. So as citizens, they have decided to mourn with who have lost their loved ones. Beni's civil society, one of the initiators of the Day of No Action, insists on the implementation of a large-scale military response to pacify the region against the ADF rebels. Louis Saliboko, a member of civil society, deplores the government's silence about civilians' massacres in the northern part of North Kivu province. He says people are dying everywhere, even in the city. There are always massacres. He says they observed the day to pray for the dead. It's also to call on the government, because they have noticed that authorities no longer seem to care about the people of Beni territory, because people are being massacred and killed, and they don't see any messages of condolence from the government. Some Beni residents are just disappointed. They regret that despite the presence of the armed forces of the Democratic Republic of Congo and MONUSCO, the killings have not stopped. They believe that the government must work for peace before the worst happens. He says, because when they tell the security agents that the rebels are arriving, the authorities keep silent. Even MONUSCO, which should be helping them, seems powerless to do anything. The spokesman of the army did not wish to comment on public criticism, but he did assure reporters that they are working hard to put an end to the insecurity. Over 150 civilians have been killed in the Beni and Lubero territories by the armed group in just 1 week. The ADF, which is allied with the Islamic State, is cited as the perpetrator of the killings. For VOA Africa, I'm Zane Mneti Zaidi in Goma.
You are listening to Day Break Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, June 19th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The Zimbabwean opposition leader and nearly 100 youths who spent 2 nights in jail for allegedly holding an unsanctioned meeting appeared in court on Tuesday, where they complained of police assault. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, where human rights groups and the opposition party say the arrests are meant to curtail their freedom.
After their arrest on Sunday, members of Zimbabwe's main opposition party, the Citizens Coalition for Change, or CCC, arrived in court in obvious pain, some limping, one with a broken leg and a heavy police guard. That did not stop one man from shouting to waiting reporters. He says, "Are you hearing me?" The women were asked to kneel down and crawl to a waiting police truck by this government. Baton sticks, claps hit us. One of the ladies had her room invaded. Why? She had just a braille on. Please record that. These people are cruel. Police officers accompanying the opposition members refused to comment. Tinashe Chinopfu-Kutwam, a lawyer representing Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, talked to reporters about his clients.
The charges which have been preferred against them are of participating in a gathering with the intent to promote public violence by coordinating breaches of peace. They have also preferred an alternative charge of disorderly conduct in a public place. They were assaulted by the police at the time of their arrest. Some of them were forced to jump into a dirty swimming pool while putting on their clothes. They were then forced to crawl to a police vehicle which was parked several meters away. And we are going to lay those complaints before the court.
Chinofu Kudwa said the police initially arrested about 100 opposition activists together with their leader, Jameson Timbam, but some were released for unspecified reasons. Arjen Zugumbo is a lawyer and a member of parliament for CCC party. He said their members had been arrested at Timba's home Sunday while commemorating International Day of the African Child. He said the arrests were meant to quell opposition's activities, which started during the era of the late President Robert Mugabe's nearly 40 years in power.
What this entails is that the regime is hell-bent on stopping voices of dissent. The regime is hell-bent on stopping the opposition. It's as if the opposition is now a banned organization. It's as if the CCC and the entire opposition forces are banned in this country.
VOA repeatedly contacted Zimbabwe's Minister of Information, Jennifer Muswere, for comment, but has not received a response. But on Monday, he said no one in the country was above the law and anyone who commits an offense would meet the wrath of the law. Columbus Mavungam, VOA News, Harare.
A fire broke out on Tuesday night at the Military Ammunition Depot in Chad's capital, N'Djamena, causing a series of blasts. Government spokesperson and Foreign Affairs Minister Abdulrahman said on X. Reuters quotes Foreign Affairs Minister Abdulrahman as saying that the depot was in the north of the city, in the neighborhood of Guji. He called on the population to remain calm. Dozens of Russian military instructors have arrived in insurgency-hit Burkina Faso following a jihadist attack in the restive north, about which the authorities have remained silent, sources told the French news agency, the AFP, on Tuesday. After taking power in September 2022, the West African country's coup leaders expelled troops and diplomats from former colonial ruler France and have turned to Russia for military assistance. An independent source also confirmed the arrival of the instructors, a term used for former fighters from Russia's Wagner mercenary group, now regrouped under a new body called the Africa Corps. Today, Wednesday, is Juneteenth, which commemorates the day in 1865 that slaves in Texas learned of the end of slavery in the United States. President Joe Biden made it a federal holiday in 2021. Kofi Asante is the executive producer and artistic director for the Philadelphia Juneteenth family. He tells me that the truth emancipation should begin with reparations and self-reliance by all African peoples.
From our point of view, understanding that in 1865, Major General Gordon Granger marched into Galveston, Texas, to announce to the remaining 250 enslaved Africans that they were free 2.5 years after the Emancipation Proclamation was signed. We feel that the Juneteenth celebration is a perfect example to bring the African American, the Caribbean community, and the African community together in unity, to surround ourselves with understanding what that freedom means to all of those entities. We need to be able to understand that we are African wherever we are in the world. That will bring us much closer together in order for us to be able to gain respect in the marketplace, respect in terms of our culture and tradition, and respect as a people of the world. To be able to, in my opinion, teach the world what man's humanity to man really means.
These days now, when you talk about emancipation, there are those who are arguing for the need for reparations. Where do you stand?
The Emancipation Proclamation was a business deal. It was signed by President Lincoln because of the commodities that were at risk, and that was cotton, rice, and the enslaved Africans. We were the commodity. And emancipation the proclamation was signed so that business could continue. We, by God's grace, came out from under the law of slavery, but slavery still exists. Many of us still have shackles on our mind and don't understand what our independence really means. That's a fact. But in terms of true independence, in terms of the emancipation versus reparations, I think that I would love for the United States of America, I would love for Britain, the United Kingdom, to pay us what they owe. That would be the right thing to do. Those of us that are fighting for reparations, we should continue to fight for that present. Whether it happens or not is another story. But we also must continue to build our own economics. We must continue to build our children for their future, irrespective of anyone or any government. It is about gaining economic freedom by rolling up our sleeves and working hard with each other to create circular dollars in our community to be able to exchange with one another economics and commerce.
Kofi Asante is the executive producer and artistic director for the Philadelphia Juneteenth family in the eastern state of Pennsylvania. June 19th is the U.S. holiday known as Juneteenth, which marks the day in 1865 when slavery ended in the former Confederate states of the American Civil War. In this U.S. presidential campaign, candidates Joe Biden and Donald Trump are both reaching out to black voters around Juneteenth. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns has our story.
President Joe Biden hosted an early Juneteenth concert at the White House.
Our history is not just about the past. It's about our present and our future. It's whether that future is the future for all of us, not just for some of us. They're all ghosts in new garments trying to take us back. Well, there are. Taking away your freedoms, making it harder for black people to vote, or have your vote counted. Closing doors of opportunity. Attacking the values of diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Donald Trump's campaign launched a Black Americans for Trump coalition Saturday, with the former president reaching out to black voters at a Michigan church.
It's a very important area for us. We've done more for, and I say this, I say it proudly, more for the black population than any president since Abraham Lincoln. That's a big statement.
He said black voters are losing jobs to what he called millions of illegal aliens.
Every state is a border state. You've heard that. But they're coming into your community and they're taking your job. They're affecting the African Americans and then after that the Hispanic Americans more than any other group.
Trump said black communities are hurt by worsening crime under Biden.
The crime is most rampant right here and in African American communities, and more people see me and they say, sir, we want protection. We want police to protect us. We don't want to get robbed and mugged and beat up or killed because we want to walk across the street to buy a loaf of bread.
FBI data shows violent crime in the United States is down across the country in both large cities and small. Biden says black voters got him elected 4 years ago and he needs their help again.
As black Americans voted, Kamala and I are President and Vice President of the United States because of you. That's not hyperbole. Because you voted, Donald Trump has defeated former president. And with your vote in 2024, we're going to make Donald Trump a loser again.
4 years ago, just 8% of black voters chose Trump. Pew Research polling in this campaign shows 18% of black voters backing Trump. A jump that could make a difference in close races in swing states, including Michigan. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
And that's it for this Wednesday, June 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming on board with us this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a lovely day.